Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
You guys should do it out here. You should do it from out here in the remote Carpathian Mountains. I'm telling you, it's beautiful.
Be worried about that. Be careful about those bears, because if they're, you know, I know the European, Eastern European mind. Americans like bears. We let them eat garbage. And
No. There are so many bears out here. It's like it's
grizzlies.
Tons of them.
They're big bears.
They're big. They're basically, well, they're brown bears, but yeah, they're not. They're definitely not. They're not quite as big as, you know, grizz. But
they're not Belu.
No,
there are only eight types of bear in the world, John.
Yeah, they have that shoulder hump, you know.
Yeah,
they do
brown.
Have that. They're strong. But
you know. And they're very curious.
You can't fight one, sensei. Karate moves.
Yeah,
All right,
guys.
So this is a guy who lives high on the hog, and he has this Tammany Hall style attitude to power. And it's the Chicago way, absolutely.
The Chicago way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago way.
The Chicago way. That's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
As promised, my brother, Nicholas Cass, longtime former and retired now, State Department official, intelligence community official, who spent decades serving the United States government and the people of the United States. Welcome to the Chicago way, Nick.
Hi, John. Hi, Jeff. How are you guys doing?
Good, Nick. Good to hear from you.
Good to hear from you. Good to be back.
Yeah. How are things way out yonder, rather?
Well, I just got back to the Bucharest area, and I was staying at our company's hotel in the formerly royal city of Sinaia, which is in the Carpathians. And we're sitting in the lobby drinking whiskey, and everybody's phone starts going off. And the next thing you know, there are bear alerts coming across everybody's phone. And in Romania, they don't just say, we spotted a bear, you know, in the vicinity of the whatever you are, and please don't go outside. They put exclamation points on everything. So it's like they're yelling at you. There's a bear out there. You know, don't go outside.
Who's responsible for the bear alerts? Fox News and the National Review, which seems to have tried to build up Nikki Haley.
I didn't see her out there.
You think it's
see her like manipulating the, you know,
bear, but, you know, Russian bear, beware, you know.
I will say this, there are more bears per capita. I think there's like an extraordinary ton of bears out in the Romanian mountains and in the wilderness out here. So
what's wrong with them?
Well, they take care of them. They, you know, the EU had a rule about ancient forests or whatever it is, and the creatures that dwelleth therein. And I guess the bears from all over Europe were being wiped out. Decided that Romania is the place to be. So, you know, so when you come on vacation, you come up, you go to the hotel, and, you know, if you walk 100 yards over, you know, you might be in bear territory. So you got to be careful.
I'm bringing a shotgun with 12 gauge rifled slugs, because nobody should be near a bear in the woods. I don't care. I mean, it's not a joke.
I think actually the best thing would be to bring that toy monkey that you had as a kid with the two symbols, you know, the one that you wind up and it's like, hey, like that would
never
work.
We've never revealed that probably is the the reason why I've been terrified all these years.
All these years.
Oh, wow. What are we getting into here? I want to hear this story.
Just the sort of origin of many nightmares, I think.
Oh, kids. No.
My cousin Angela was a great, great kid, great person. She's older than me. She's an artist, and she was studying at the University of Chicago at the time when we lived in the two flat on Peoria Street, 55th in Peoria. And she had a monkey. It banged cymbals, a toy monkey, banged cymbals, and then would stop, and then it would scream.
Oh, no.
like the tin drum, you know?
Exactly. The tin drum of Günter Grass. It's exactly what it was like. And I was petrified to the point where I couldn't even breathe.
Yeah.
And that I was like 3 or 4 years old when they hit me. And I guess that scarred my life. That's why I'm who I am today.
But not only that, but being the big brother for Peter and me, you did your best to impart that fear to us as well. So,
yeah.
So if you were going to get scared, you weren't going to be going down alone.
I'm just looking at a picture of a musical chimp.
Oh, that's it. That's
wait,
it.
Is that, did you find that, Jeff?
I did.
Oh my God.
I want him to see it again.
Oh yeah, that face.
Oh my God.
Oh, and the eyes pop out. Oh my God.
Bringing it back. Bringing it back.
Yeah,
that thing is definitely nightmare fuel for those at home. It's got, you've probably seen this, but it screams and its eyes protrude about like an inch and like stick out as it screams.
That's like Google eyes, right?
Yeah, it's terrifying. And it's got these big human ears. Like, I don't understand that. It's so weird.
Yeah, they're tilted forward like he wants to listen to what you're saying.
Yeah, well.
That was the mascot of the Republican debate on foreign policy. Kind of scare everybody.
Absolutely.
All right, well, we have established that the media loves wars, and which means they love Nikki Haley because she loves wars. And she's running, I guess I asked this of Tom Bevin last week, isn't Nikki Haley running for vice president of George Bush's administration?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it, doesn't it? I mean, it's like it reminds me of these people, congressmen and others who go, hey, I've been to Iraq. No, you didn't. You went to Baghdad. You were in the green zone, grazing at the, Kentucky Fried Chicken or wherever the heck it was. You don't know anything about it, So you have these people who are out there trying to bank on these foreign policy expertise and credentials when it's clear that, I don't think she's really thought that deeply about any of this stuff. I mean, how can you, you say, okay, she said something like a victory for Russia is a victory for China. Okay. Right. Who put Russia and China in the box together? What possibly could it have been that might have contributed to precisely the kind of outcome that presumably we wanted to avoid? Oh, could it have been the kind of thinking that exemplifies, is exemplified by Nikki Haley? I suspect so. So, it's just, these fake credentials and this idea of I was there. It's really sad. And I think it's past time that people really started to listen carefully. Like,
can we get a little personal when these politicians say I was there?
Yeah,
I was there. Like I was in the Middle East. I was, what really happened? They were there, and I'll tell the listeners the secret. They were there, and they mentioned to their aide that they needed to stop at the market and pick up some Turkish carpets.
Yeah, that's right.
Young Nicholas Cass in his blazer and khaki pants and his navy blue blazer and rep tie had to go, yes, ma'am, and go to the market.
No, I will say this. I will say this. That fortunately, I was very fortunate to have some really top quality ambassadors who shielded me from that kind of duty. But they did pass it out to other people, so I was lucky that I got to focus on other things, shall we say. So, but yes, that happens a lot, and people get their carpets and they, think that they're engaged in the issues. They don't know anything. They don't know where the country is on the map. It's really sad. And then you hear these folks at the debate and it wasn't just her, it was the others. I mean, most of the others right. spouting off about these things. And, you know, that song, and that song comes back to my mind, you know, something like, and they don't think you know, but I know that you do. You right. know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That whole line.
You're speaking yeah. of the rich men north of Richmond. Right.
Yes. And it was interesting because I know the guy who wrote that one, Oliver Anthony, I guess that's his pen name. Yeah. He said that, you know, the guys who he was thinking about were on the stage that night. And I remember that line that you wrote a couple of weeks ago in your column about the Tea Party and how the Republicans put herders out there to sort of like co-opt and tame the movement. And they were claiming to be supporting it. And what they were trying to do was neuter it. You know, I mean, it's just, and I hear the Republicans talking about that now. It's just, you know, it's really kind of sad. Anyway, you know, it's just a weird, I think we're at this weird moment right now where it's, you can expect that what you're hearing, 99% of it is just absolute malakias. So what are you going to do?
You know? I don't think I have to actually bleep that one.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, it's interesting because we talked about this in the past, and this idea yeah. of, you know, elected officials and who we put in power matters because, you know, it trickles down. And one of the things we've seen is that our, you know, our foreign policy has been just, it's like whack-a-mole. I mean, it's yeah. you know, what's the important thing that we want to push on other people today? And that's what it is. It's the du jour, whether it's, you know, LGBT rights or it's our political ways or, you know, quote unquote, democracy on people who don't necessarily want democracy or aren't, you know, ready for democracy, whatever it is. And this is what we reap this now because our State Department's been a mess for years. When you guys are obviously older than I am. When you were younger, did you even think about foreign diplomacy? Did it ever touch your life? I mean, now I feel like I hear about it all the time.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting question. To me, when I try to make sense of it, I think of it less in terms of what they're saying and what it is that they're mm-hmm. trying to represent. And I think it's basically, again, the establishment trying to use whatever trope they can to maintain their control of the rice bowl. And whatever it takes to do that, they'll do. And, you know, as you guys know, and John, you were kind enough to feature this, you know, on your site. But, you know, I wrote a column mm-hmm. last year for the American Conservative that John republished. And it was about the 1997 coup in Turkey, where so many of the same mechanisms were employed to oust the government there. And it just, the parallel with the United States is just absolutely, contemporary United States is absolutely nuts. And again, you just take whatever it is. It doesn't matter what you say. Mm-hmm. It just matters if it works. So you say you support democracy and that Putin is a thug. Okay. But then you support, at the same time, Mohammed bin Salman, right?
Who, yeah, right.
You know, whatever. So, I mean, it's almost like, again, I think that nobody's really fooled by any of this except for people who want to be so fooled in the United States. Everybody else kind of in the world knows what's
going
on.
Nick, we can't spend the entire time talking about Nicole Wallace, okay?
Yeah, my God.
But, I mean, people like that who are they fill up the scatological tablespoon and then serve it to themselves, that's okay. You want to eat that? Go ahead, eat it, enjoy it.
Go ahead, yeah, that's right.
But
you'll like it.
But you're trying to feed it to me, and if I don't take it, Lawrence O'Donnell will pronounce me the world's worst human being.
I think it's even getting worse, and it's fascinating because
now
of the
West.
Now
they put me in prison. Yeah,
right. Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I mean, you're starting to see more and more in the sort of so-called advanced countries of the West resorting to this kind of government pressure against civilians who say the wrong thing. And, you know, I mean, it's just, it's certainly not democratic. And I think, again, it's you're seeing that reaction develop everywhere because it's almost as if the narrative, shall we speak, or the apparatus or whatever it is starting to fall apart. People sort of understand that. So, for example, in Romania here where I live, you know, there's a party called the Alliance of the Union of Romanians, which is a right-wing party, and it's people are really worried about it, thinking that it might actually win the elections. And of course, it got its start when during COVID, and of course, You know, people, yes, right. people attributed it all to quote unquote disinformation about COVID. Now it's this, now it's disinformation about this or that. And the challenge, I mean, the problem is you can rationalize that kind of thing any way you want. But if you don't address the underlying factors that give rise to it, then you're more than likely to guarantee the acceleration of that phenomenon by the very way in which you talk about it. So it gives it, it gives people a legitimacy in a way that they might not otherwise had if they are seen as the enemy of an establishment that appears to be corrupt and falling apart. And I would say, you know, what's happening in Washington is really indicative of that. I mean, I reposted my article on my LinkedIn site. So if people are interested, they can always go look on LinkedIn or Nicholas S. Cass and you can find it. I'll be happy to, you know, hook up. But the
how's that working out, LinkedIn thing? Do you
it's good. People? I mean, yeah, I mean, it works out very well. I mean, it's a professional site, so, you know, a lot of it, you know, it's useful in business as well.
So you're not.
But I know.
Like some guy, like, remember me? I was in the trench coat. And I met you in the alley in Amsterdam.
No, I get other things too. I get, oh, let's have a, you know, I am a purveyor of you know, symbol bashing monkeys. Would you,
right.
You know, that kind of thing. Right. Some of that, but I
want to get one of those.
Yeah, I know. Definitely. You got to put it back on
the kids.
The only problem is you can't put it back on top of the TV because the TV's too narrow now.
That's why I hate TV.
That's right.
Our mom put it because it would scare me away from the TV.
That's amazing. Right.
And every time there was a surge through the TV, that's probably what activated it. But I reposted it on August 1st. And then since August 1st, there's what, been two more indictments? I lost count.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the whole point of that.
We're up to four or five now.
Yeah. The point of that is, I mean, I don't care what people are, you know, saying these days about, oh, the technicalities of the legal arguments. I think we're so far beyond that. It is, you know, clear. I suspect to many people, even on the Democratic side, that this is, there's some issue with that. Now they may be benefiting from it now, but gosh, you know, what's going to happen in the future if this kind of continues? And I suspect it will. And so I fully expect that we're going to see payback on the other side as well, and that's probably the way it has to go now, because it's like you've talked about before.
I want to see it, you think I'm going to meet you in a river, like in the middle of the river with my arms open wide, like in El Cid, like how the warring tribes met? Brother, let's be friends, let's roast some meat now. Okay, no, I want to see every Democrat above the rank of dog catcher to be tried and perhaps executed for their sins. That's how angry I am now.
But John, who are you? Who?
I don't want them. I don't want people executed.
I know.
Yeah. No, I know that. But that's the thing I don't understand. Like we've gotten to this point where on both sides, and it's crazy. The animosity, the anger is just so at the tipping point.
You provoke the bear to continue
the provocation? I don't understand. That's the thing I don't understand. I mean, and I'm trying to understand it. I'm not saying you're wrong. I just don't get it because I don't give a crap about it. I mean, someone says to me they're a Republican and they believe X, Y, and Z, and someone says they're a Democrat and they believe X, Y, and Z. I don't get mad. I don't care. You know, it's great.
I don't either.
But that's the thing. I don't understand what in this moment, why we're all getting so worked up about everything. Everything has to be life or death argument.
Let's ask the international.
You're right. I mean, I think what's happened is over the course of the last century or so is that so much has become invested in Washington and Washington decision-making in terms of people's fortunes and everything else. I mean, you think about how many government regulations emerged over the past half century. Many of them in Chicago. And as John and I and our brother Peter know all too well, that many of those regulations were a handy tool for people who may have had other ideas in mind. And so they hammer you in line. Yes, and so they hammer you in line. We know all about that. So, obviously it's magnified on the national stage. I think the biggest thing was, Trump's, the biggest, I think the precursor, the precipitator of this is not only the growing alienation of you know, the population from Washington decision making, and particularly in the 21st century where we were fighting these pointless wars, and you know, some people benefited and everybody else was like, what the heck, what's going on here, why are, and then when Trump came in, of course, the response, the immediate quote unquote resistance, the emergence of the deep state as a way to combat him via, you know, slow rolling direct lies, you know, all of the sort of hoaxes that we saw with respect to the investigations, no accountability for any of that, you know, impeachments, which I think were somewhat, you know, my argument would be that these were, I mean, obviously legal in process, but extraordinarily foolish. And particularly in the case of the first one, had no basis of in reality. And then, of course, now the continued indictments of the president and the accusations in the meantime by the current president of the United States that, you know, half of the country is, you know, on, you know, not only what it was, I can't remember what he said in that Dark Brandon the Red speech, whatever it was.
The bloody speech,
The bloody speech and all of that kind of stuff. And you see that echoed by elites all the time. And so I think the trouble is, and this is where I think this gets really kind of fascinating, but also interesting. Conservatives generally, small c or large c, generally tend to see put a primacy on trying to preserve institutions because they think that, as Edmund Burke said, that, you know, we put our confidence in the larger group of society because we anticipate that the logic and the reason that any one particular individual can have is very small. Right. So we'd rather have a pool of that. And so institutions are necessary, this kind of thing. The guys who are arguing for the institutions and the protection of the institutions, unfortunately, have no recourse other than to say we should just stop doing what we're doing and adhere to the you know, the original understanding of the institutions and how important these things were. But they've been so systematically dismantled for many, many decades. I mean, as a, you know, I went to law school and, you know, law school was really, really difficult in part because there didn't seem to be, like, for example, in constitutional law, there didn't seem to be any logic to some of the things we were reading and trying to accept as constitutional decisions because they were had no, literally no bearing in the Constitution. And that was all because of people were talking about, you know, the Constitution as a living document, which was basically just a excuse to do anything you wanted to do, right? In other words, to get away from the constraints that the institutions would put on you. So, you know, we've seen that in education. We've seen that in terms of the lack of civics being taught. People don't know anything what's going on. We've seen, you know, that happening on a variety of fronts. And we've seen the corruption in Congress, you know, the complete focus on just trying to be reelected.
Money in politics is certainly.
Right. And so the idea that we're just going to stop doing what we're doing, go back to the institutions, increasingly looks ludicrous. And so under conditions of political frontier warfare, it is, you know, I think many more people are coming to the conclusion, unfortunately, that, you know, you have to have the tomahawks out in order to beat back the attack of people with tomahawks or knives or whatever, you know, yatans or whatever weapon is that you want to choose. Mm-hmm. And there's no
the tomahawks are out now.
Right. And that the time to come back to, you know, the sort of, you know, get along situation that was embodied in the Constitution will be after people realize what the pain is and how much they have to pay. And I think, you know, so conservatives are out there saying, wait, but this is horrible. Oh, you know, the hypocrisy on both sides. But I think that those days are past now, unfortunately. And it'll be a question of whether that can be recovered after people have made clear that there will be, you know, that it's a tit for tat kind of situation or that there's going to be pain given for the pain included. So we're heading for that period, I think.
Even the smaller aspect of this, okay, like in media, can you put the genie back in the bottle when in terms of media, in terms of credibility?
No. The media is
you can't. It's dead. You know, and I look at some of my former editors are really good people. I mean, like John McCormick, Kristen McQuarrie, Bruce Dold. Okay, they're solid Americans, but other former editors, and writers that I know are total Jacobins, literally.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, yeah. where if you're a Republican, if you support like life, for example, you are to be jailed, reviled, and attacked mercilessly.
Yeah.
And after you poke me long enough on these scores, I'm going to poke back, because that don't tread on me flag, the Gladstone flag. I really like that flag. I don't know if I've just,
yeah, cool flag.
Have I committed some racial sin? You know, is it a racist thing now? I don't know. It's a flag showing a rattlesnake.
Some people say
what?
That's what? I mean, that's the usual thing. Some people right. say,
you know what they say. Yeah,
yeah. Wait, guys.
Some people say no, it's racist.
John. But... I mean, I don't know if it is or not, but Nick's point is that's all. That, you have just to drop those words, and then it's like cover to say whatever the hell you want.
Right.
So I think
experts say
right exactly.
But it's the media. It's the legal profession. I would doubt that there are. Well, you never know. There may be, you know, an element in the legal profession or legal in the law school right now where people are actually saying, you know, maybe this constitutional sort of idea of original intent might not be a bad thing, because if we get rid of that, then we have no standard whatsoever. There might be that, but I suspect most of the people throughout the whole sort of elite cadre in the United States are going more toward the direction of anything goes. And you're seeing that with these court cases. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. And especially now that there's going to be one the day before or the day after, the day before Super Tuesday, I think.
Right.
I think so. I mean, the idea again gets back to that you don't think, but I know that you do. And I think it's like, it's really, we're going to go through a tough time for a while, I think, everybody.
What Oliver Anthony said was, yeah, that some of the people at the Republican debate didn't realize that the song was about them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And immediately the Jacobins pounced on this and said, see, you don't use this as an anthem, you foolish Republican. See? But he was speaking. But I'm thinking, in my opinion, that he's thinking about the neocons like Nikki Haley and Asa Hutchinson and others like Chris Christie and others, big state, big government, big war, endless war, masters of war. And that's what I think he meant.
Well, it's interesting too that it was the reaction. And so we've now discussed what the sins of the Republicans are in this respect.
Right.
So let's look at the Democrats, the left. They pounced on him right away.
Yeah.
Why? As we say in Turkish, why acaba? You know, why? You know? And then you would look sort of conspiratorially at the other guy, like, why are you
right?
Right. So why did they do that? I mean, they clearly recognized internally whatever Anthony himself later said or didn't say. And I think
they were threatened by it. Right.
They were threatened by it. Yeah, exactly. And the reason why is because, you know, it's clear that the people who are the biggest purveyors of disinformation are the people who are the promoters of this idea of disinformation. And that includes the media. And it includes, unfortunately, many others. And it's not just in the United States, but you're seeing it in a lot of different places. And again, if you attribute everything to that, you'll feel better for yourself. And you'll feel, well, at least, you know, we're stopping what the real problem is, but you're not addressing the real problem. And the real problem will get worse and will bite you in the ass. And then you're going to be wondering when you're out on the street, how did this happen? So the rise of President Trump was just one early indication, relatively early indication. But I think, you know, we're seeding, you know, the next wave, the next ratcheting up of this. I would say one thing. I have some sources in Gen Z, right? And so I will say that I see that there is a natural tendency on some Gen Zers to laugh and scoff at the, you know, sakalamadas or the jokes or the foolishness of what, you know, they're being presented as, you know, the official line. And so the natural tendency of young people is to sort of say, oh my God, this is stupid. It was one thing when the official line was the Rotary Club and the national anthem and all those sorts of things. Now it's all this, you know, the woke crap. And so I'm hoping that there is enough people who will ask questions such that, you know, the eventually the situation can right itself. You know, they won't bow down to the false god. And but I think it's going to be the young people who are doing it. I hope they're there. I hope they're there. You know, I mean, the generation has been so destroyed in many ways by the COVID lockdowns and by the injection of these patently false ideological ideas with respect to gender and all of these sorts of things, which are, I mean, frankly, on their face, kind of absurd. And you're being forced to take these as legit. And I think, you know, that's what I mean. I think the establishment is in big, big trouble. And the indictments for Trump are going to be, if anything, the clear marker that here's the one guy who's against it. I mean, I know I like DeSantis. I like what he's done and all that stuff in Florida. And, you know, maybe DeSantis will be honored by lawsuits as well if he were to ever win. But the fact of the matter is, the one thing that distinguishes Trump from everybody else is clearly the animosity and desire that he be destroyed on the part of the establishment. It's self-evident at this point, you know.
It is good. The position is good for Trump. He's, to me, he's the guy who's going to either win the nomination or lose the election. One or the other. Yeah, I don't know. I think he'll win the election. He'll win the nomination. Clearly, the larger issue to me is the if there is. I don't know if there's a larger issue than that, but another issue that concerns me is the belief domestically that somehow we are. America is beholden to Ukraine, that we have the American taxpayers have to do whatever they can for Ukraine.
Right.
I don't understand that, especially given the fact that what I've been reading in the press, how do you like that, Nick? What I've been reading in the media is suggests that Ukraine is not going to win this thing, and that every day things get worse for them.
Can I say something here on this?
Yes, that's why you're here.
This is fascinating because, you know, John, you remember when Jeff, you remember when we talked about this before the war started, and we talked about Mr. Creosote and, you know, that one last wafer that could lead the whole edifice to blow up, remember? I mean, I think it was literally the day before, the day or so before Putin invaded. And, you know, so there was this whole year and a half, almost 2 years of rah-rahing in every possible direction. You know, Zelensky was Churchill. And did you know he was Churchill? And by the way, he was Churchillian. And look at those cigars. He smokes them, and just like Churchill did, you know. And then you had all these think tanks out there talking about this and that and the other thing. And I know we've talked about this over the course of that period about how phenomenally obvious and foolish that was, but and how harmful it was in the American body politic to kind of purvey that. And now you're seeing finally some reality starting to creep in. And so again, I like in the spirit of my Turkish friends, I have to ask, you know, acaba, why are they doing that? Why is this coming out now? Is it just because the editors have come across this new information that they didn't understand or really appreciate before? And so, you know, oh, we got to run this story.
Because they're trying to get ahead of the story that they know is out there.
Right.
And they're trying to shape it.
They don't want to not be part of it.
Right. So they're trying to figure out where the music is going to stop soon, and they got to have a chair. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And exactly. And the only problem is the chair is on the back deck of the Titanic, this policy. And so we're heading toward this really weird situation where, you know, in some of the media, you already hear people starting to blame Zelensky for, you know, you know, they were casualty averse or something. Or like, why are they doing this? And, you know, I mean, it's just
they'll
so
blame him.
Obviously,
they have to blame him because the whole Trump I mean, the whole Hunter Biden, Joe Biden payoff thing is coming out. They're screaming that, oh, there's no evidence, like one of the former commie editors that I used to, that I mentioned, not the guys I mentioned, but another producer, one,
yeah,
is screaming something about, there's no proof. There's no proof. Really? There's no proof? Yeah. Okay. Then why are you freaking out, dude? You're freaking out.
It's really sad. And yeah. It's actually quite tragic because now we are, I mean, I have to say, this is like the worst execution of foreign policy. It's the worst strategic thinking of foreign policy that I've ever seen in our country. This potentially is strategically worse even than Iraq, because Iraq, most people's view is, it's over there. It's in the Middle East. It's not an area that really, quote unquote, matters in the United States.
Right.
And that, we know how bad of a disaster that was. This is in the heart of Europe. This is causing a lot of angst. I mean, people are like, you know, I talk to them all the time, and they say, you know, the idea, basically, if I could summarize, is we're in NATO because the idea was to keep the Russians out. So now, under your great leadership, we're in this position where these guys are going to be taking over Odessa soon, and they're going to be close to our border. And then they're going to be the ability. This was not the way this was supposed to go, right?
Yeah.
We keep the Russians, we confront them, and we keep them. We are in NATO, and we build a solid wall, and we'll keep the Russian influence out of our territory. And yet now, as a result of our own contributions to this situation, we have now helped create a situation where the Russians are coming closer and closer. You know, a couple of weeks ago there was a drone attack in Russia, by the Russians, rather, in Ukraine, right across the Danube from a small Romanian village. And, you know, windows were shattered and all those kind of things in Romania. I mean, what a perfect punctuation to the utter fecklessness of this kind of approach. And it could have been done completely differently. Could have been done in a much more serious way. It would have required some realism, and it would have required some wisdom, and it would have required a sort of Hippocratic approach to the situation. But, you know, we are still in the moment of peak hubris and not willing to see what our own limits are. Now we're going to have them forced upon us, and we're going to be seeing that play out in a lot of ways. We're seeing that play out in Africa. We're seeing it play out in many,
oh my
parts
God,
of the
Africa.
World.
South America.
Yeah.
Africa, they're murdering the farmers now, just like some sort of terrifying fantasy from the 1950s, from the Mau Mau times. Now it's happening again. You know,
well, I think
this time China and Russia are involving themselves because there's metals. There's
minerals and everything
minerals
else.
Minerals they want.
Yeah, of course. But the issue, I mean, the world was always going to be a very, very dangerous place, regardless of what the Americans do, what the United States or the West or whatever it is that does. Getting back to the Nikki Haley thing, what I find most kind of irritating about that approach to foreign policy is it's kind of like, it's Chicago, so you probably don't have to imagine it, but imagine a fire captain who on the side is an arsonist, and creates fires and then has to be able to go in and stop them. That seems to be the rationale for the perpetuation of the sort of neoconservative, shall we say, or neoliberal intervention.
Matches Boyle.
Approach. Yeah, exactly.
Matches Boyle.
Yes, Matches Boyle. Yeah, perfect guy. And so you have, everyone talks about the neoconservatives, et cetera, which is good. But there's also like this sort of strain of liberal strain, you know, exemplified by guys like Samantha Power, guys like Kerry and Samantha Power, all of that kind of response that we used to call responsibility to protect. Very, you know, this idea that somehow we're going to be involving ourselves in these ways, and of course, that kind of policy justifies the continuation of the apparatus and the actual continuation of the identifiable people who are in charge in those places, and of course, credibility or rather examination of that, which could cause some doubt and cause people to question the wisdom of those folks, is never allowed. So there's never any credibility. There's no rather accountability. There's no nobody's paying the price for their failures. Nobody, nothing happens to anybody. And so, you know, you take an idea like get out of Afghanistan. Great idea. Biden completely screwed it up. Talk about, you know, defending Europe from Russian encroachments. Great. But why was it that, you know, you as vice president were perhaps directly involved in policies that seem to aggrandize not only your position, but maybe others, and pursued this sort of foreign policy that has led to this thing. So now we're in a situation, if I'm one more thing on this, but now we're in a situation where there has been some, what is the word I look for? Apocalypse, the exposure, no. I guess.
There's John Kerry's face melting is what you
said. So now we've seen this being called into question. People are starting to wonder about American policy, right? American leadership. It started in Afghanistan, that the ineptitude of the Afghanistan pullout under Biden cannot be underestimated or overestimated by as in terms of its impact on people's thinking about these things. You now have this situation where many people months ago were saying the best we could hope was for was a protracted a stalemate or a frozen conflict. That would be the best. We've decided to keep that going, and the Russians are probably going to be in a better position. I hope not, because as I was telling, I was talking to Jeff about, you know, one of the big problems with Putin, of course, is his effort to weaponize the Moscow Patriarchate of the Orthodox Church against all the other Orthodox patriarchates and churches, and use that as a means to exert secular Russian concrete interests at the expense of the faith. And so one of the great tragedies of this war is going to be, the, in my opinion, the potential damage to very, you know, the Orthodox wing of Christianity and actually to others as well as a consequence. But we're now in a position where people are starting to call our bluff. And so then you think about Taiwan. Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, we had this creative ambiguity for a reason. Nobody wanted to like commit and say we're going to fight a war on Taiwan, but we wanted to keep people guessing because it helped complicate, you know, sort of the situation in ways that maybe were useful to us. Now we're in a position where that increasingly looks ludicrous. It was exposed on the debate stage. And so what this means is that our ability.
Was it though? Was it though? Or was Nikki Haley lionized as a great leader?
Well, she was lionized by Fox News, which is clearly, that camp.
And the National Review.
Oh, of course. And all the establishment media are looking at the establishment, conservative and liberal media are looking at this as this is the return of the Washington Generals.
Right.
You know, the Washington General, the Washington Generals want to take their position back where they never beat the Globetrotters, but they get their cut at the end and they can go out to dinner and all that kind of stuff. Right.
Right. Sam and Harry's.
Exactly. And so, but the idea is now we're exposed. And they've tipped our hand, and this is not a good situation for us to be in. And you know, the idea that we're going to continue, that we're going to double down by making more commitments in areas that are not our vital national interest will only further undermine our ability to actually have influence when it, you know, when it comes to vital national interests. You know, you can argue that NATO is a vital national interest. You know, the actual existing NATO membership, and this is what we were talking about before, is Ukraine. I would say Ukraine was never a vital national interest of the United States. Even Obama said that to his credit. You know, he said sometimes he would say things and then he would
wonder. When he said Mr. Romney, the 1980s want their foreign policy back? I mean, that's kind of smarmy little...
But he was the president who gave Joe Biden control of Ukraine.
Yeah.
You know?
He's the president who's responsible for this because he knew what Joe Biden was doing. His State Department, of which you were a member, I'm sorry to say, were actively opposing what Joe Biden was doing, according to reports. Why didn't they oppose it vigorously enough?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think that basically,
Sorry, Nick. I still have to ask you.
I would just say I would just look at it this way: we have now come to the point in the with the rise of President Trump that the establishment had now seen. I mean, eventually, the reason why Trump was in power is because enough people were fed up with what the establishment was doing economically and everywhere else. And the Iraq war had a huge impact on the popular perception of Trump. And as we were saying before, the guy has four indictments against him, and they are badges of authenticity. None of the other Republican candidates, have that. And as we were saying before, that if DeSantis somehow were to win, maybe he would be so honored to have an indictment levied against him as well. He could, but who knows? I think there's probably those guys might actually be more accommodationist. I don't know. It's one thing to be in Florida; it's another thing to be at the president. Now, Trump made a huge series of mistakes. There's no question about it. But the fact of the matter is, he has been identified as the guy who stands against the establishment and who they are clearly trying to destroy in a manner reminiscent of the Yirmiseki Shubat, the February 28th process that I wrote about in Turkey. I mean, the parallel is just something else. And I know where the next steps are. And so we'll see what happens as it goes down the road. But man, I tell you, it's just we have dug ourselves a very, very serious hole, gentlemen.
Backed ourselves into an ugly corner.
Yeah. Yeah.
By the way, lessons from a Turkish coup is the article that Nicholas Spiridon Cass is referring to, my brother Nick. And he served with the government for 31 years, retiring in 2021. Most recently, he was deputy, what was the title? Deputy Assistant Secretary of State. He spent his life serving the country. And you can find him on LinkedIn. And you can find me on LinkedIn, too, if you ever figured out how to use it. Thanks for revealing all that stuff about the monkey that terrified
me, friend. You're welcome.
This is quite an episode. We have to get you right back.
I know Jeff wants to use that photograph as the terrifying image to put it on our podcast.
Sweet.
For Jeff Carlin, executive producer at WGN, unfortunately a friend of Cats and a fan of pies that he never makes for me. And
Pshaw.
Yeah, Pshaw, because I shouldn't have pies. And my brother Nick, living in Romania now, former U.S. government official, retired in the intelligence community, in the diplomatic community, he's done it all. And Nick, I hope someday, I know your wife and kids won't like this, but they're lovely, but I hope that you get back in the saddle again, because I think country needs clear thinking like yours.
You're very kind.
And I hope you deal with that metaphoric bear on the edge of Romania, because it's terrifying. I just don't want Fox News to go in and do a dramatization and ruin everything and create another war. So for me, John Cass, editor-in-chief of John Cass News, for Nick Cass, my brother, and for Jeff Carlin, my friend and brother, thanks for joining us. And talk to you again next time on the next edition of the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.